At 2:45 in the afternoon of March 11, 2011, a magnitude 9 earthquake moved the main island of Japan 8 feet and launched a tsunami 4 stories high into the region of Fukushima, Japan, killing thousands and flooding a nuclear power complex. In the hours and days that followed, the cooling systems failed, and the uranium cores in the 3 operating nuclear power reactors partially melted down, releasing deadly radiation. Authorities were eventually forced to evacuate an 80-square-mile zone around Fukushima. It was the worst nuclear accident in history, with the exception of Chernobyl in 1986. And the Fukushima accident is not over yet. At least 2 cooling pools to prevent further meltdowns in the broken reactors are leaking into the ocean, forcing the pumping in of even more water. TEPCO, the Tokyo Electric Power Company that operates the complex, will run out of space to store the radioactive water sometime next year. TEPCO and the Japanese government have plans to dump much of it into the Pacific Ocean, leading to an outcry from the public. For more, I'm joined now by Arjun Makajani, president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research. Arjun, welcome back to Living on Earth.
Thank you for having me back. I love being on Living on Earth.
We've always been told that the solution to pollution is dilution, and the Pacific Ocean is very, very large, far dwarfs the water they would be releasing into it. What do you say to that argument?
Yeah, now they're not going to pump the whole Pacific Ocean and dilute it in the whole Pacific Ocean. That's one thing. They're not going to do that. So they're going to dump it near the shore. The vertical mixing in the oceans is extremely slow, so it is going to remain for some time in the surface waters. Of course, it will be diluted somewhat, so it will impact the shore more, but tritium has a half-life of 12.3 years. There's also a lot of strontium, which mimics calcium in the body. Now, one thing to know about strontium-90, because it mimics calcium, it goes to the bones, it becomes part of the bone marrow. Our immune system stem cells arise in the bone marrow. And the immune system of the fetal development is more complicated, but it is a hematopoietic system. And when you are putting radioactivity into a place where your immune stem cells are originating, you are compromising all aspects of health. And these are aspects of radioactivity that have not been adequately studied. And I think before an organization like TEPCO is allowed to pollute the oceans with strontium and tritium, which can cross the placenta, not only in human beings. So, you know, we're not going to drink seawater. But the biological systems, the reproductive systems, the energy systems especially, a lot of our immune systems are very common between human beings and a large variety of animals, including fish. And so I think it should be on them to demonstrate that this is not going to severely disrupt the reproductive and energy systems of the living beings where they are going to dump this.
Well, you can see how Japan is in a real pickle here. I mean, the cooling pools are filling with this radioactive water. They can't keep it there forever. What other alternatives are there for them?
Yeah, dumping it in the oceans is the most polluting and, in my opinion, the worst. They can evaporate it slowly and emit it into the air. There is some natural tritium that Mother Nature makes in the atmosphere. If it is small relative to that, the ecological impact would be much lower. And the third option is simply to extract the tritium. Separating the tritiated water would isolate it, concentrate it, and it could be used in biological research and exit signs and so on. It is proposed to be used in fusion reactors. You know, a large one is being built in France. It could be mixed with cement and put in storage for the long term. And one of the things is that this long-term storage would be, you're talking 70 or 80 years, by which time it would almost totally decay away. So there are options available that have much, much less ecological impact. They are more costly, but in the scale of decommissioning costs and dealing with the Fukushima, none of these alternatives appear to be very costly. So we're talking about decades and hundreds of billions of dollars. But then think that you are setting a precedent for how to handle a difficult situation in a way that's respectful of future generations, that's respectful of ecosystems, and that's respectful of your neighbors.
You know, of course, there's an exclusion zone around the Fukushima facility, and I've read that, like Chernobyl, there's actually all manner of wildlife returning to that area, things like wild boars and snow monkeys. I don't know, is that perhaps a small silver lining here?
Well, you know, we saw that in the pandemic, too, when the economies were shut down, wildlife started coming back all over the place. The difference here is that this wildlife is now in a radioactive environment. There's been a fair amount of research in Chernobyl as to the genomes of the creatures that inhabit the Chernobyl contaminated zone. And there has been significant genetic damage to this. So it's not like you're bringing pristine wildlife and then, you know, nuclear accidents cause human beings to withdraw and therefore Mother Nature will be happy. No, to the extent that I can tell, Mother Nature, in the sense of respecting the genomes of the creatures as Mother Nature has evolved them, is not happy.
You know, it's disasters like Fukushima that have people so concerned about the safety of nuclear power. But at the same time, much of the world, including President Biden and the U.S., is pledged to decarbonize their economies to avert the worst case scenario for climate change. And nuclear can be a component of that. How can we square the need to rapidly decarbonize and the legitimate concerns about the safety of nuclear energy and, for that matter, how to handle the nuclear waste that comes along with it?
Okay, so I've looked at this problem as an electrical engineer. There is a shortage of two things, I think we can all agree. There's a shortage of time because we've wasted so much and not done things early enough 30 years ago when we should have started. And there's a shortage of money. There's not a shortage of low carbon electricity sources. I have done an hour by hour assessment over a 4-year period of, can you actually have a solar and wind electricity system almost exclusively with smart grids and storage and peaking electricity supply, a lot of technical paraphernalia around the solar and wind system. Can you make it work reliably? And what will it cost? Suppose you did not have nuclear. And the answer to that, to my own surprise, I concluded that it was possible, feasible, and economical. Now, 14 years ago, I thought it would be very difficult because that was a time when solar energy was still very expensive and battery storage of electricity was also very expensive. Now, things in the energy sector have undergone an absolute technical revolution in the last 14 years. Solar and wind electricity are now the cheapest sources of new electricity. That's not Arjun talking. That's Wall Street talking. Wall Street firm Lazard publishes a cost estimate every year of the costs of new electricity sources. Solar and wind are estimated at about $40 a megawatt hour. Nuclear is estimated at about $160 a megawatt hour, about four times as much. Now, solar and wind need, you know, battery storage, demand response. They need other things. But that delta between 40 and 160 is vast. You can accommodate a reliable, resilient, renewable energy system for cheaper than doing nuclear. From a time and climate urgency point of view alone, we should not be investing in nuclear. Then you can look at the failed history of nuclear power to address climate change in this country. 15 years ago, when Congress started taking up the issue of climate, there was also announced a nuclear renaissance. That was about 2005 in the Energy Policy Act that was passed that year. There were applications for more than 30 reactors as a result of this, you know, government support, streamlined licensing. It was all going to happen. Modular reactors. Of those more than 30 reactors, essentially all are dead except two. Two are being built in Georgia, Vogtle 3 and 4. They are hugely overcost and hugely delayed. They were supposed to come online years ago. So this promise that nuclear was going to somehow solve the carbon problem has already failed. And just purely from a business point of view, we can't afford it.
Arjun Makajani is president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research. Arjun, thank you so much for taking this time with me today.
Thank you very much for asking me.